Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
My work is my power, so I want to invest it where it really can do something. And then on the other hand, I'm no longer on Facebook, but when I was still on Facebook and I got invitations for shows, I was invited for a show where it was like the male-female was skewed or all male, I would just say like, oh, I'm so sorry, but your show is more than 50%. Like, there's so many men, I don't have time to see this, and I just think you should be doing better. And I would do that very publicly, and I would piss galleries off to no end, which was also funny, but also, it, again, brought up conversation, and I do think it really, you know, it's like these are things that a lot of people were thinking already, and they just don't dare say anything because we're all afraid of gatekeepers. But I don't really think we need to be that afraid.
I am thrilled to welcome artist mother Selena Trepp to the podcast today. She is an artist researching economy and improvisation. She works across media, combining performance, installation, painting, sculpture, and more to create intricate setups that result in photos, drawings, and animations. In addition to the studio-based work, Selena is active in the experimental music scene. She currently lives and works in Chicago, Illinois, and I am just delighted to share this conversation with all of you and to spend an hour talking to Selena. So, Selena Trepp, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hi, Kaylin.
Hi. So just want to start by having you point us back to something in your childhood that is connected to your life as an artist today. I'm curious to know if you were exposed to arts or like what is kind of the thread that you feel like made you an artist.
I don't know if it made me an artist, but I come of a family of artists. So I think for me, it was very natural, or it was the expected thing to become an artist myself. My mother is a painter. My grandmother is a painter. My grandfather was a filmmaker. My father was a filmmaker at times. So it was like, and I was raised in a commune in Switzerland where there were a lot of artists. That was sort of a thorough through sculptor. So it was a very kind of possible thing for me to do. It didn't feel like an impossible thing at all. And also through that, of course, I was exposed to a lot of art. So we went and saw a lot of art, to the point where as a kid, of course, I wasn't really a super fan of going to the museum.
Because you were so overexposed to it?
Yeah, because it was like, oh, we have to go see one more art show and we can't, you know, like.
Why can't we just go to the movies like normal kids?
Or have computer games or things like that. We didn't have a television growing up. Things where we were like, okay, we want some more normal stuff. But yeah. I do really credit that as far as like, for me, it was never, I think being a person who comes from a family where people were already artists, I am sort of uniquely prepared for what it means to live like this, especially like not having necessarily the expectation to make a lot of money and being resourceful and figuring out like seeing it more also as a lifestyle, right? There's a certain kind of wealth that comes with just living in the arts and being part of that community.
I love that. I love that you were kind of a little bit prepared, or actually a lot prepared for that, just because I feel like, you know, so many people have that draw to becoming an artist, but the lifestyle is really what holds a lot of people back, or just is something they just don't understand how to, you know, how to integrate like the lifestyle of an artist into their own practice and their own current life. And with that being said, like, I think one of the amazing things is that, you know, artists are so open and there's so many different ways to be an artist. And so I think it's just kind of figuring it out yourself, but I still know there's roadblocks along the way when you kind of realize certain things.
Yeah. And I think there's also just a lot of, right, you can't really, it's a very difficult career path in regards to trying to make a living. It's not like, there's not such a straightforward line of like, oh, well, you do A, B, and C, and then you're guaranteed sort of a middle-class lifestyle, because that doesn't really exist. And that's really problematic, of course.
Right. So Selena, tell me a little bit more about your work. I know it's like very diverse. So this might be a harder question for you, but you know, when you walk into an elevator and somebody asks you, oh, you're an artist, like what kind of art do you make? What do you say? Like, how do you sort of describe the work that you make to people, and specifically like what your work looks like?
It is really difficult. I usually just don't talk about everything. I just talk about what I'm working on right now. And so lately I've mostly been saying I'm an animator, because most of the work that I've been doing in public is ultimately comes out as an animation. And I talk about how I make work that is often in the public space, that interacts with the architecture. And then I also speak about the conditions of my work. And then I say that a lot of my work is, sort of as an animator, the things that I animate or the themes within my work are very much based upon the premise of almost a performative action that I started 10 years ago, which is I work with what I have. And that means that I've been making these films and pieces and artworks, mostly lens-based pieces that are created with materials that I haven't bought any materials since 2012. I haven't brought anything into my studio, which then means that sort of these materials become actors, and it creates a specific kind of aesthetic. And I would say it's very playful and also musical, non-narrative.
Okay, I think we have to emphasize this point again. You have not brought art, new materials, or you have not purchased art supplies since 2012, which is 10 years.
It'll be 10 years. Yeah. Soon. Yeah.
So tell me like what that actually means.
Yes. I know. It's just like, it's funny because it's a very straightforward concept, but it's very difficult for people to grasp, I realize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what it actually means is that I have not purchased, brought anything into my studio other than myself and my clothes and the things that I eat, and also, of course, my camera, which I have a new camera and I have a new computer. So those are new things. But other than that, I haven't purchased anything. And so what that means is that things that I make, and of course, this is a little bit hard to understand because every artist makes different things and some people don't really need materials, but my work is actually very material-based. So what that means is that I have 10 canvases, for example, in the realm of painting. And these 10 canvases have been painted and overpainted over the last 10 years, because the canvases themselves then become sort of props or actors within photos and animations. Or I have made a series of drawings called Dirty Drawings, in which I took old drawings from my file cabinet, from my flat file, and I was like, well, these are old drawings, I don't need these anymore. So I started to overdraw them with a very specific kind of method. But it also means that things run out. So, you know, I don't have, after 10 years, and my material reality is very, very different than when I started. I started with a lot of stuff. That was definitely part of the impetus. Mm-hmm. But now I don't have a lot of stuff, and things have become very precious in the sense that certain colors are gone or almost gone, and certain materials are completely gone, like plaster. And so it creates then, because I only have a limited amount of things, that then pushes me to figure out how can I do what I want to do with those things. And so, yeah.
So interesting. What if a fellow artist friend gives you a bucket of paint, you just don't accept it, or you don't?
I mean, people always offer, but yeah, no, because I'm really, it's very, at this point, it's really become about the experiment. I mean, it's actually really probably the closest that I've ever come to what I would consider research or science, mm-hmm. in the sense that it's really become also for me a study, like my interest in it is really about like figuring out what happens when you work within a completely closed system that is self-depleting, mm-hmm. and how much can I squeeze out of this, and how does the squeezing out process affect me? And so it's not about receiving new things, but it's about what happens like in a closed system. So the system must remain closed for it to work. That being said, though, I mean, that always the question is like, how do you exit this situation, right? Like, it's like, it also feels like it's like, I'm stuck here mm-hmm. in a certain way. Or like, how do I stop? And that's also always the question that people have for me. And I realized that it was like, for a long time, I was like, well, I mean, the fantasy would be, of course, to just like have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But then my mother, so speaking of artist mother podcast, mm-hmm. my mother is, she just turned 80 and she lives, I'm half Swiss, and my mother is actually American. But I was raised in Switzerland. My mother lives in Switzerland. But up until recently, my mother would spend 4 months a year in Cape Cod, and she had a studio there. She's a painter as well.
Mm.
And so she had to sell the house. She's too old. It's just too much for her to maintain sort of the living there and living in Europe at the same time. And so she gave up her studio. And last summer I went and I moved the studio. She said, Selena, she told me that I could have the contents of her studio, basically.
Okay.
So I moved all her art supplies to my studio, which are now stored in my studio. And my plan is that next October, when it'll actually be 10 years, that I have only worked with what I have, to then use her stuff, open that and bring that into my supplies. So that will be kind of like the next step in that project.
I love that. I love that it's still like a repurposing and a reusing, and that it's also connected to the legacy of, you know, your family art career, of your mother, kind of thinking about what she's touched and made, and I don't know, like letting that influence sort of the narrative of the materials as they move and become your studio. So I don't know, it can become its own project in a way, like closing the chapter on that one thing and shifting to another, I don't know, like system of working.
Yeah, totally. No, I mean, I feel like that too. It's really exciting. It's actually a super exciting prospect, just because it is like, it's not like I'm saying like the one thing is over, but I'm still not really fully in control of my materials because it's her materials. So I have no idea what's in these boxes. I have like just all these boxes and paintings, but I know that's what she works with usually. So I'm like, okay, this will be a real challenge and a learning experience for me, but also it's very rich just thinking about what it means.
Amazing. Yeah,
to come from a family of this kind of like, how do I work with that? So I'm excited about that. And it's also clearly affecting me right now. I'm just now getting ready to shoot a film, a stop motion animation that for the last 3 months I've been working on, creating the sets and the sculptures and all the aspects of it. But knowing that I have these materials that I don't really know what they are, but that I know that there's going to be a material infusion, knowing that I have this has really, I realized, totally affected how I'm working on this film and how I'm working with materials. I'm much more kind of like, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to use all the pink. Maybe I have pink.
As I love that.
Before I can definitely, I was like, yeah, I was probably holding back just knowing that I need to make do. And now I'm not holding back. So it's very nice how that whole kind of the project, sort of the future, the prospect of an infusion is already affecting the current project. I can tell.
So interesting. I'm curious to know just how you kind of arrived at this concept and this idea. Like what was sort of the inspiration for, you know, sort of setting these parameters for your studio practice?
You know, there were quite a few different aspects. So one was, of course, just ecology, like really thinking about and being concerned about ecology and thinking about how can we be more efficient in different ways, and realizing that really the most efficient thing is to not consume. That one of the problems is that we're over consuming. And then starting to think about, I think, art making in particular. To me, the interest of art making and sort of the power of art making is that it's a creative problem-solving process. Like, it's about kind of reshifting the perspective on things and allowing us to see things in different ways. So thinking about if I can make my art make this, like, one of the things about the work that is surprising to people, like, knowing the context of how it was made within this kind of lack, basically a system of lack, making do, but the work is really bright and joyous, actually. Like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't really think, it seems very positive. And so, like, that allows us to rethink also, what does it mean to not consume? Like, that actually is a joyous thing, to kind of be able to reimagine what materials are. So there's that aspect. And then there's also, at the time when I started doing this, I was also pretty fresh out of grad school. And I realized that we were, like, out of grad school a few years. And within the context of me and my friends and my colleagues, we also were all kind of dealing with the reality of wanting to make art, do things, but not necessarily having the resources to do the things the way that we wanted to, just because of the realities of, like, finance, and you're not in school, you don't have that kind of environment. And to me, being held up by that, I thought, well, that's actually really problematic, that people get so hung up on, like, not being able to do it one way. As artists, again, really thinking about art as this problem-solving process, being like, well, if you can't do it one way, then you have to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about, like, oh, well, showing how one does that, like, just doing it, and in that way also proving that that's the case, that you can't really, if you can't make it out of marble, then you make it out of paper. If the idea is good, it'll come through, right? And so... Yeah.
And sometimes when we know that all of that is out there, it like limits our own creative thinking ability in that, like, we're just always looking for the next material, the next object, the next thing to be the solution, rather than, like, kind of relying on our own grit and wisdom to figure it out, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sort of thinking about what are we bringing to the table, just uniquely. Yeah, but then also in thinking about being a parent, I mean, it was at a time I had a very small child, and it was also a way to save money. I was kind of like, well, money, you know, like, not buying materials actually does really save money.
Yeah, but how do you make money? Like, in this model, like, if you're not, like, you're kind of taking away this, like, commodity exchange of, like, yes, I will make an object and you will pay me for the object. Like, what are some of the ways that you've found to, you know, still have some sort of financial stability and sustainability with your career, you know, working in this way?
Yeah, I mean, for one, well, I teach. So that is definitely, I think that's a really important aspect of how my financial stability, especially over the years. So I teach adjunct 10 hours a week. I'm basically dedicated to university life. And then within the art context, I, of course, do make things that come that are sold. So I paint, I make works on paper, these sell. I also used to, not, I haven't really done so much recently, but a lot of my work was photography. So there is this objectness to it that gets sold. And then right now I have a show. So one of the things that and I have paintings. So right now I have a painting show, and, like, these paintings sell. But it does mean, like, when a painting sells, I have one less canvas in my studio also. So
yeah, like,
it's an interesting, so, which also then becomes then this interesting question about, like, especially with the sculptures. I make a few a lot of the shows, the installations that I do contain furniture that I build out of my studio. And so right now I'm shooting a film, and I have multiple exhibitions opening up during the time that this film's going to take me a few months to shoot. And I realized that I just realized today, for example, that I was like, oh no, part of the set of this film that can't move is actually supposed to be one of these shows. And so this is a problem, which I haven't solved yet. That's what I've been thinking about. I was like, okay. So there are issues with the way I do it. And then the other way that I make money, and I think this is actually the most kind of profound way, is with the films. I have been now somehow been able to get onto into the position where I've been doing getting big public art commissions where my films are shown in public spaces, working with within a completely different kind of context, within an art context, but also within a public space context. And there, these kinds of commissions just get paid better. So then suddenly, these films that actually never made any money are the thing that are probably bringing me the most money right now.
Awesome.
But they also take a long time to make.
Yes. So tell me about Artist Mother Life. You have one kiddo. I'm not even sure. What is sort of your family makeup?
Yeah, I have one child, 10-year-old, and a husband. And okay.
Okay. And how do you and your partner sort of share responsibilities, caretaking for your kid? Like, tell me a little bit about sort of the way you structure your life as, two people with careers and wanting to be engaged in your communities and part of the world.
Yeah. So this is, I think, something where also my upbringing really helped me. That for me, it was very, very clear, even before we had a child, that the only way that I would want to raise a child would be in a totally time equal timeshare of childcare, meaning that for me, it's extremely important that my partner does half the work, literally. And that is really tricky because that, of course, means that you can't work full time, especially when you have a small child. And so luckily, for us, both of us are, Dan is a musician, so he has sort of like a lifestyle that is either he's completely gone, but when he's here, he's really here. And then for me, I teach adjunct, and that was also, and other than that, I'm also very flexible. So most of my work is kind of like, I can make it work. So really from Maxine's birth on, we held to that in this kind of ridiculous, but very, very functional. We just said, like, we broke up the day and the time and said from wake up till 12:30, one person, and then from 12:30 to 5:30, the other person. And then we switch off. Since Maxine was born, also switched off bedtime and cooking. And so there are like interesting situations in there that were important for me to realize, where it was like, I remember when Maxine was really small. Of course, when I would put Maxine to bed, I could nurse Maxine to sleep, and that made it very easy. And Dan, when he would put Maxine to bed, he could not do that. And Maxine also never took a bottle. And so Dan was like, well, you should, like, it's so much easier for you. And I was like, no, it's not easier for me. It's harder for me when you don't do it. It's easier for you if I do it. So you have to just figure out your own way to do it. And Dan was like, okay. And he did, you know? So I kind of realized that, yeah, that idea of like easier for who, it's not, of course it's easier for me. Yes. It's easier for Dan, but it's not easier for me. What's easier for me is to not do it at all.
Like, right. Right.
And that's what I want. And so that's kind of been, I've been very lucky with just the fact that Dan has the kind of work that he has, that we both have a super high tolerance for not having a lot of money. Because that is what that means, right? It means that neither one of us could really work full time because we took care of Maxine half time for the first years. And then once we came over that hump and with school, we still do it like that. And that really means that that we both have, of course, less time than we used to make our work, but we still have a substantial amount of time and also a real, like, I think because we're both artists in our own medium, we really understand how important it is for each one of us. And I think for Maxine, it's also very valuable to see that we both Maxine's parents are really engaged and into what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah. And I love what you brought up about money too, because I feel like that is often kind of the linchpin, right? Where it's like, well, you make more money, so I guess I'll do more caregiving and caretaking. And I don't know, like, there's just something about that, like, recently, like, these narratives are just so accepted, right? Like, you have more money, or you are the one making more money equals you have more autonomy. And of course, like in the big picture, like those things have always rubbed me the wrong way. But like, especially recently, I feel like, I don't know, just in continuing these hundreds of interviews that I've done, like just talking through the way that people structure their lives, like we really value money so much more than we even realize we do, you know? And so I don't know, it's just really interesting to hear the way that you think about it. And it is connected to you know, to labor and also to the way that you're financially choosing to sort of be in the world and in your community.
I don't know. And I think, I mean, I do, like, I think I have something to offer to people there as far as like showing that it's possible, but I do think it's really hard. That is probably the privilege of my upbringing, mm-hmm. of sort of having already been raised in that and thus not being that afraid of it. And I think when people have children, especially, we tend to fall into the patterns that we were raised on. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult when you sort of have, you know, were raised in a certain type of style, you want to provide exactly that kind of thing, and you might not be able to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we have a really nice lifestyle, but, you know, we have one little car and a little TV, and, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. but we travel a lot and we see a lot and we do a lot of things. So it's kind of like, but it is definitely, yeah, it's not modeled for us so clearly so often. And even in the art world, I feel like it's not really modeled to us because the models of success are very, very often very similar, kind of like about this wealth attainment, right. as opposed to maybe like having a free life or having,
right. you know, having time to do or the having, thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. So good, Selena. Thank you just for, you know, living your truth and being willing to talk about it. Artist mothers know there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself, because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Zambucol helps you feel your best with powerful immune support, powered by nature's superfruit, black elderberry. I'm personally so grateful for Zambucol and their immune system supporting products. I think about my health a lot and feel like the best action I can take besides getting good sleep is nourishing my body by consuming healthy things that support my immune system. Zambucol elderberry gummies taste great, and I love that they are low in sugar and contain no gelatin since my family is vegetarian. It's so easy to get my kiddos to eat one of these gummies every day, and it helps me feel good knowing my kids have the support from products like this, especially in a season of life where reinforcing our bodies with healthy things is just on our minds a lot. Zambucol is a trusted brand. It's the original black elderberry and was developed by a virologist, so I know I'm getting a great quality product. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com. Use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Just as a note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you, Zambucol, for supporting the Artist Mother podcast. We so appreciate you and the products you're putting into the world. Again, Artist Mothers get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at ZambucolUSA.com and use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. So tell me, you actually brought this up as something that you wanted to talk about in the interview, and I want to hear what this means to you, but just how are you kind of integrating your political background, the way that you feel about being a human, being a citizen, being in community, the way that you feel about politics and ethics, like how is that kind of influencing you know, your practice and your life?
I mean, for me, I like to have all my or as many decisions as possible be influenced by my ethics as much as possible, meaning sort of my ethics as somebody who wants to live in this world without doing too much harm and like try to make things better for people and for myself. And the way that I do this is really thinking about like thinking about places like, where do I have power? First off, I think the first thing that I realized was like that, of course, we all have a lot more. Society tries to make us feel like we don't have any power, but actually we do have a lot of power. Every decision that you make is powerful, whether you say hello to somebody or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in my studio practice, in my creative practice particularly, it's very much about like, how do I choose to work with people and who do I choose to work with? So for example, one of the big issues as a woman within the art world that drives me crazy is just the fact that within the art world, there is still such an insane gender gap in regards mm-hmm. to everything, really. Mm-hmm. And then as somebody who has had sort of the opportunity to sit on commissions for things within the art world, I realized that not only do men get much more of the money and much more of the shows and much more of the attention, mostly white men, but really men in general.
Mm-hmm.
In schools, it kind of flips, though. It's 75% females who are in graduate programs and in undergraduate programs. So what then happens is that if you're, for example, on a jury for a residency program, that's where it came up for me most clearly. We were asked to basically kind of like go 50-50 female male. And I said, well, that really actually totally disadvantages women because mm-hmm. there's 85% women applying. So mm-hmm. it's easier for men to get in. And then I was like, well, this is super problematic. And so in that situation, actually just me saying that and bringing it up made them change their rules and make it proportional.
Yes.
Like if they're going to have any kind of thing. So that was really great. But then for me, I was like, I just kept on for years being so irritated about it all, like getting all these invitations for shows. I'll be like, 8 males and 1 female in a group show of people I know. And I'm like, why? Like, I know that there's so many good female artists, like it shouldn't even be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then I thought, okay, well, what can I do to change this personally? Because I don't just want to be mad. And then I realized, well, one thing that I can do is I can just basically take away attention. And that is something that I learned from being a parent. Where I was like, for Maxine, the worst, when Maxine was small, sort of the worst punishment would just be like if I would ignore Maxine.
Mm-hmm.
Like not getting any attention. So I decided like I will no longer go look at art shows that are group shows that are majority male, nor will I participate in group shows that are majority male.
Mm.
And so what that means, actually, I just had to do it today. And it's interesting. I have like a really nice kind of form letter where if I get invited to a group show and I'm interested, I'll say like, yes, I'm really interested, but I only participate in shows that are at least 50% female. I hope that that's the case. And most often, either it is the case, or if it's not the case, it will actually, like I have very often when I've said this, what happened is like that maybe they would like invite another person, you know, it was like something that would happen. And at times I've also have to say, I would say like, well, then I can't participate. I don't want to participate. I don't want to give my attention or power to that kind of thing.
Mm.
So that has actually been really successful in the sense that it's like, it brings up a conversation. It helps me also to decide who I actually want to work with, because somebody who has a problem with that would probably be not somebody who I want to work with anyway.
Definitely.
And I think it also kind of made it clear like the power relationship between sort of me and the person who's asking. It made it clear that, yeah, I don't need to, like, I want to do this, but I only want to do it if it's right. Like, my work is my power. And so I want to invest it where it really can do something. Mm. And then on the other hand, like, I'm no longer on Facebook, but when I was still on Facebook and I get invitations for shows, I was invited for a show where it was like the male-female was skewed or all male, I would just say like, oh, I'm so sorry that your show is more than 50%. Like, there's so many men. I don't have time to see this. And I just think you should be doing better.
Mm.
And I would do that very publicly. And I would piss galleries off to no end.
I love it.
Which was also funny, but also it again brought up conversation. And I do think it really, you know, it's like these are things that a lot of people were thinking already and they just don't dare say anything because we're all afraid of the gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I don't really think we need to be that afraid because in all reality, it's about the quality of the work, you know.
Yes. The quality of the work and, you know, the life that you're trying to lead, right? Like being an artist is, I'm, you know, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but like you've clearly described how being an artist is just as much for you about the life that you lead and the way that you exist in the world as it is about what you make. And I know that's true for me. Like I always, you know, when I'm interviewed, just talk about how it's not so much that I had this drive to like make things, which I do have that, but it's more that I wanted to know how to live like an artist. Like I wanted to commit to the lifestyle of an artist and for whatever that became or continues to become for me, you know, is going to be different than the next person, but just, I don't know. It there's more to it than just making things and sending them out in the world. It's about how you interact with people, how you disrupt systems, how you push for change, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's different for everyone, mm-hmm. ultimately.
Yeah.
I guess that's why, yeah. Like, I wouldn't even, I think certain aspects about my, like, about this, I think is like, would probably be applicable to anyone mm-hmm. of just kind of whatever field that they're in, like, whatever it is that you are kind of passionate about, but then also connecting it back to your day to day, like, not having such a separation.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to do that at all in all ways. I mean, I find, for example, as a college professor, I find like supporting that system, that's such an expensive school that's bankrupting people, but finances me, you know, like there are lots of questions there too, where I'm like, well, like I wish I could be ethical on that, but I really do need to pay some, I need some secure income, you know.
Yep. Selena, I just want to share this sentence from your artist statement, just because I feel like it reflects what you've just been talking about. But it says, the sensual joy of both making and engaging with the work that results illustrates my foundational proposal. Following one's ethics can deliver such bright, fanciful rewards. And I love that description, like the bright, fanciful rewards of, you know, seeing some of the fruit of that labor of really leaning in and following what you believe in and kind of making the hard decisions sometimes, but hopefully seeing the rewards of that. I just think is a really lovely way to write about that and lovely perspective.
Oh, thank you. It was really hard. Artist statements are so hard.
They are hard. Okay, just a few more questions for you, Selena, as we kind of wrap this up. I'm feeling really inspired and just grateful for the chance to share in conversation with you. Tell me a little bit more. You know, you've talked a little bit about how you kind of split time when you had your kid and were kind of dividing up your household like tasks and giving yourselves time to your careers. But I'm just wondering, for you as like a person, did becoming a mother like have any sort of influence on your art practice or you know, the way that you thought about your career, maybe that was unexpected for you?
I mean, it really influenced everything, and I think it all was unexpected because somehow it's really was very unimaginable, or what I imagined. I don't know if I really. I think it's made me. I mean, as an artist, I think it really. I always joke that I went from being somebody with social practice to somebody with antisocial practice, in the sense that before I was very sociable and very much around people, but I always also had a lot of alone time, and so once with a child, that like that aspect of life is like there's much less alone time. And I need much more. I need that just for myself. And so my studio practice has really changed and adapted to allowing me to do that. I also think, I mean, all the animation stuff, whether it be like very intricate animation things, are very meditative and calming and relaxing. And I think that's something that I need to counterbalance kind of like the stress of being a parent or just being in the world in that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's profoundly affected everything I do. It also made me a much better negotiator about all kinds of things, made me much clearer about sort of like, I would say like it cuts the crap in a lot of ways, or that's what it did for me.
Yep.
It's like before I would have had like more, yeah, just having one more thing. I mean, having a child takes up and gives both a lot of like emotional space and actual physical time where it's just like, yeah, well, I'm usually, you know, I try to be home and have dinner with my family at 6 o'clock every night. And things like that. And that's just how it is. It's okay. I'm fine with that. But yeah, it definitely changed, I think, everything. The one thing that it didn't change, I think, is it probably made me a better artist all in all. You know, like it made me kind of just much clearer.
I love it. Tell me some of the ways that you nourish yourself and try to care for yourself, you know, through this pandemic, through this phase of life, being an artist and mother and kind of, you know, living in a city and teaching. And I mean, I know you have a lot of things in your life that are maybe a little more minimal or structured a bit differently than the status quo, but I know there's still a lot on your plate. So just wanting to know how you do kind of move inward and other than studio time, how do you kind of care for yourself and find nourishment?
Well, yes, I definitely have a lot on my plate. you know, it's hard. Like when you say other than studio time, for me, studio time is that for sure. Like as much as I hate the stereotype of like, you have to go to the studio, for me, it is probably the most, like, that's what I do. Like, I used to do yoga and things like that before I had Maxine, but, like, I definitely don't do that. If I have 2 hours, I go to the studio. And I go to the studio pretty much every day. Other than that, like, walking and biking, my main way of getting around in general is either by bike or walking. And I do that a lot, and I love that. Especially walking is just really great. And I'm actually... I've been teaching remote for the last 2 weeks, but next week we'll be back in person. And one of the things I'm looking forward towards is to walk to the school, which is a big walk. It's a very long walk. So I'm like, awesome. That's one nice. But yeah, other than that, eat well, smoke pot, smokes.
Yep. Selena, tell me, is your studio outside your home? Like, are you commuting to a studio? And is that sort of degree of separation something that's important to you? Or have you had a home studio before?
Yeah, so my studio is outside of my home, and that is extremely important to me. Yes, yeah. I've had it outside of my home for a long time, before I had a child. So, and I just need to have, like, I mean, especially now as a parent, I need to have a place where I'm completely alone and that is totally separate from every, like, it's really my own space to work in. I used to share the studio, and even that was extremely difficult for me, like, to just have somebody else in my space. And then also my husband works at home most, when he's around, he's at home. His studio is at home. So both of us at home all the time is not so great.
Yeah.
For me.
Do you do any work at home? Like, do you do any drawings, or is it kind of like when you're home, you're trying to keep things a little more compartmentalized and just be present and be home and not think about art?
At this point, that's how it is. When my team was much smaller, I definitely did work at home. I did a lot of hand-drawn animation at home. That's kind of how I got into hand-drawn animation, actually, was when my team was an infant and was napping, and it was like, well, then I couldn't leave, but I still had open time. I started doing hand-drawn animations that I would just draw as many drawings as I could each nap. And then that would be one complete animation. And it became this kind of interesting visual measuring of naps in a way. Like the longer next scene slept, the longer, the more intricate the animation was. If it was a really short one, it was a very short animation.
Oh, so I love that. We got to share some of those when we publish this episode.
Yes, they're called nap animations.
Awesome. Yeah, like things like that, just the ingenuity and, you know, I'm just always inspired by stories like that, how artist mothers just keep making the work, whether it's 10 minutes or 2 hours, you know.
Yeah, like trying to find the space. Although I will say, I mean, for me, it was very important then, and it is really important to have. I think it's super difficult unless you kind of engage your work is about your kids to be able to do it side by side. Or I'm like, hats off to people who can do it. I definitely can't. Yeah. Like, I need to have separation.
Selena, tell me, what are some goals or things that you have kind of on your radar that you're kind of working towards in the next 6 months or a year?
So things I aspire to or things that I'm actually doing?
However you want to answer that. And they can be art, art related or just personal goals.
Well, I guess the big thing for me is really, I have several shows opening up that I'm excited about. And then I have this film that I'm commissioned to do for O'Hare Airport, which is an animation that will be permanently installed in the international terminal, which I'm super excited about. And so that's really my main, I would say, from now until June when it's due, that's probably going to be the main thing I'm working on, is animating that and just doing something that is, you know, they're like, oh, it's a minimum of 25 years. It'll be on display. I was like, what?
Wow.
then suddenly I can tell. I'm like, wow, oh, right. Well, I really have to make sure nothing annoys me about this, because 25 years is a long time.
Yes. No pressure.
Yeah. I'm definitely feeling it. So that's the main thing that I'm thinking about right now. But in the big picture, I hope that in summer, things will be calmer worldwide with the virus, and I would love to be able to go to Europe to see my family this summer and, you know, things like that. I would love to be able to travel again and for things to be easier. And
Yes, don't we all want that?
Yes, so.
I get that. Okay, let's close with 5 questions just for us to get to know you a little bit better. This has been so wonderful. Tell me, who's your biggest art crush?
My biggest art crush, I saw this question, I was like, what? This is really hard. But I would say I really love Alice Neal and Nikki DeSantel, who are both dead. But as far as like thinking about like, yeah, both of them are female artists that I find extremely inspiring and I learn a lot from and keep continuously learn a lot from. I'm also, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited to go see the Ida Appelbrog show called Mona Lisa at the UFC Collegium this week. It's like last week that it's open. But this is also kind of interesting. She, in the late 60s, when she was a mother of 4 children, she would lock herself into her bathroom for hours to just get some space. And she made this insane series of painting her vagina, like drawings of her vagina with mirrors, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of drawings. And so that's installed at the University of Chicago. So I'm going to check that out this week. I haven't seen it yet, but I somehow feel like this is probably going to be great.
Oh, what a greater description of like artist mother life. Locking yourself in the bathroom so you can paint your vagina. I mean, I think that's like, that's it right there.
So I feel that might be a future crush. Conceptually, right there it is.
Yep. I love it. Okay. You kind of mentioned this, but, you know, my second question in this final 5 is always, what's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Well, dream trip, I would actually really like to go back to Japan. That would be that's sort of like my next kind of dream. I've been there once and I would love to take my kid there. I think they would love it. And yeah, I would like to go back there. So hopefully that will happen.
I feel like so many artists answer Japan. Just, it just seems like a very place on a lot of artists' radar.
A very aesthetic place.
Yes. Okay. Give me the name of a book or a film that has been a big inspiration to you.
The Umbrellas of Cherbourg by Jacques Demy. It's a film.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
The whole meal. I mean, I like a lot of food. I've been really into Korean food in general lately. But if I would have to have like one thing to eat, I love ice cream cake.
Yum. like the, what is that brand? Like the classic Carvel?
Like any kind. Like any I can kind. Go totally
like as homemade. Up or, well,
yeah. Like I'm really, I just like the concept.
Yes. okay. And just want to give you the space to give a shout out to somebody, who supports you in your work.
I think the main person that I really need to give a shout out to is Dan and Maxine, because they are the biggest supporters, my husband and partner and my child.
I love it. Selena, where can people find more about you and your work?
They can go to my website, which is www.selenatrepp.info, or you can just Google me. And then also I have a show opening in Chicago, February 25th. At the Cultural Center in Chicago, which will be open for 6 months. So that's a pretty big window.
Perfect. Yes. This episode will definitely be out during the time when people will hear it and be like, yes, I can go to the show. So yes. That's great. Awesome. Selena, thank you so much. This has been just so wonderful and so inspiring. And I can't wait to share more about your work and our conversation with everyone.
Thank you so much, Kaylin. And thanks for doing all this.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.